Tony Curtale is a former hockey player, longtime junior hockey coach, and at one point, the head coach of our Windsor Spitfires. Join me, Drake DeMore, as I talk with Tony about his entire career from on the ice to on the bench and what he is doing now.
Well, how you doing? It's Zach Caskey.
Adam Henrique.
Joe Siddle. Tom Crawford.
Todd Warner.
Brett Romberg.
TJ Laramie. And
holy mackinaw, you're listening to Wind City Sports.
What up, everybody? My name is Drake DeMore, and thank you for streaming or downloading this episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast, Windsor's only local sports radio show and podcast. The radio show airs live on CJM 99.1 FM every Thursday at 12:30 and replays on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. On the Wind City Sports Radio Show on CJM, you will hear highlights from our podcast interviews, some good music, and as much local sports news as we can normally gather. Still broadcasting from home during this pandemic can be a little tough to pull some local sports news, but we're expanding and doing our Detroit Roundup as we've been doing since the beginning of the summer. Here on the Wind City Sports Podcast, dropping every other Thursday morning on windcitysports.com, of course, wherever you're listening to it right now, but mainly on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You'll hear full, uncut, and unedited versions of interviews with local athletes, coaches, entrepreneurs, and much more. On the radio show, you will just hear highlights and clips from the podcast, getting it into our 30-minute time slot on CJAM. So that's why we've expanded the podcast years ago, to make it full and uncut and free. No timeline here on the Wind City Sports Podcast, but this can run as long or as short as we want. You can also follow us and give us a review or subscribe on whatever app you're using. If you're using Spotify, give us a follow. Please give us a rating, whatever it is. But you can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, any social media. At WindCity_sports is our handle. Just simply search up Wind City Sports or the Wind City Sports Podcast, and you should easily be able to find us. Almost 5 years on the air and on the internet now. WINCITY is all one word. Wind City, the Wind City Sports Podcast. But today is Thursday, October 15th, 2020, and it's episode 209 of Wind City Sports. And this week on Wind City Sports, following our interview segment, we're going to round up some local sports news that we might have missed in the last 2 weeks, some of which might have been on the Wind City Sports radio show. And of course, if you want to get caught up with everything Windsor and Detroit sports, that's where you get all the information as possible, is on the radio show, on CJAM, and as well on social media, especially Twitter. We're always retweeting stuff, posting stuff on Instagram, Facebook to keep you up to date and up to speed with everything Windsor sports and Windsor and Detroit as well. But this week on Wind City Sports, for our interview segment, we have Tony Curtale. This man was actually drafted 31st overall in the 1980 NHL entry draft to the Calgary Flames. He's a native of Detroit, Michigan, right across the border, which is another reason to have him on the show. And at one point, he was our Windsor Spitfires head coach. Now, Tony played junior hockey, played pro hockey, and although he's not necessarily born or from Windsor, he's got a lot of ties to the city, as mentioned, obviously. Born right across the border in Detroit, Wind City Sports here, and then the radio show on CJAM. We like to give the love across the border as well. But this man ended up coming over across the border here to Windsor to coach, kind of in the beginning, yet still in the middle of his coaching career. But he did play hockey, as we mentioned too. He was the man for the Brantford Alexanders just before Bob Probert came in. After Tony had graduated from the OHL, Bob came in, and just that 1 year difference kind of avoided them playing together. So kind of talk about that, what could have been playing with a legend like Bob Probert and a Windsor legend as well. He went on to play a little bit in the NHL, a couple games for the Calgary Flames during his junior years as a rookie. But ultimately, he played in the CHL and IHL for a few years before deciding to jump into coaching. So obviously, here on the Wind City Sports Podcast, we're going to talk all about Tony's playing and coaching career, starting from the beginning, you know, growing up over in Detroit, coming over to the OHL here in Canada, playing in Brantford, of all places, you know, might have heard of somebody from there. And then, you know, his transition into coaching, you know, and as well what he's doing now. He's gone on to coach his, and do his own program specifically for player. Like, he's not necessarily coaching any teams anymore, I don't believe. But he has a long history of coaching teams, as we'll get into it as well. He started at the high school level. It's pretty interesting. Had a lot of early success early on in the States before coming over here. And into the Wind City realm, he's got a pretty big hand. Well, maybe not a big hand, but he was certainly around for a big part of Windsor Spitfire's history. Maybe not as big as it seems, but something that I like to get into. And this isn't even the reason why I reached out to Tony, but it fell in the place perfectly. I actually found Tony through Mike Scorsese's Facebook account, just having some of these guys on Facebook. You know, you start to see your mutual friends, and I'm like, yeah, I know that guy from Spit and Chicklets, which is what led me to Dean Mayrin, who was on the show earlier in the year, episode, I think, 183 is Dean Mayrin. He won the Battle of the Hockey Enforcers, pretty interesting one as well. But I had seen that Mike Scorsese shared Tony Curtale's post about promoting his hockey camp and school and training and services, really. And in the photo was a picture of him pointing at, I believe, Bradley Stetsinger or somebody on the bench of the barn of Windsor Arena. So I decided to reach out to him. And of course, we talk about coaching in the barn, the culture and how it shifted from when he had started here in Windsor, what was going on. So again, it kind of plays into a piece of Windsor history. Here we always kind of, beat a dead horse with the whole Akeem Alou, Steve Downey incident. But the reason that I do it is because it changed the culture of Windsor hockey. And before all of that, another thing happened with a man named Jeff Kugel, who a lot of people are familiar with, this infamous YouTube video, really. And we kind of go over that. Again, it's not the reason that I reached out to him, but doing the research, I'm like, oh boy, he coached Kugel. And then, well, he coached them in his last year, too. So that obviously means he was the man on the bench for that whole thing. And if you don't know anything about it, you'll hear it in the interview. So, yeah, a lot of cool things to touch upon with Tony Curtale. But all in all, it's a conversation about hockey and about coaching. So I think right now is the best time to flip it over to our interview segment this week with former head coach of the Windsor Spitfires, Tony Curtale. Here we go. So right now on the phone we have, from Detroit, Michigan, just across the border, one of the OHL's highest scoring defensemen. He was drafted to the Calgary Flames in 1980, played 5 years pro before moving into coaching, where he coached our Windsor Spitfires at one time, and was the most winningest coach in NAHL history. Tony Curtale, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for asking me on, Drake.
Absolutely. So, as mentioned, you're actually from Detroit, born over there. You played for the St. Clair Falcons growing up. So, what was life growing up like? Were you always a hockey kid? And what was hockey like growing up for you?
Yeah, I was. My great-grandma raised my mom and her two sisters, and my great-grandma was a nurse in Toronto. Oh. She got a job in Bonsecours Hospital in Detroit, and that's how we all ended up there. So since I can remember being alive, Nanny, as we used to call her, would make popcorn or whatever you needed for dinner. But once Hockey Night in Canada started on Saturday, we all had to be quiet. We had to watch. So I was a hockey fan from the very beginning.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a good way to get into it. And, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, just with family, whether it be, you know, the brothers, sisters, mom, dad, whatever it is, it's always a cool connection where you kind of start from, right? And I guess you always had a little bit of that Canada-America kind of connection, being, Canadian family living over in the States.
Yeah, for sure we did. You know, we had family over there and friends growing up, for sure. We had a cabin in Sioux, Ontario our whole life growing up, too, so we spent time up there in the summer. So always been a big fan of Ontario, Canada in general, and of the OHL. So I ended up playing there and then ended up, being fortunate enough to coach here for a little while.
Yeah, you actually have some connections, obviously, between the league and the teams. And, you know, we'll get into that. Obviously, as early as you could, you started playing for, I think it was the last year of the OHA, and then they switched over to OHL with the Brantford Alexanders. Probably a time that really shaped the beginning of your early hockey career, I can assume.
It did. It was a great experience. Had fantastic people around me in Brantford, just playing junior hockey playing junior hockey in Canada, where the sport is so well known and respected, was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I had a great guy there that ran the program, Dave Draper. who, you know, worked in the NHL after that and the Canadian national team. He's just a fantastic guy, and he really helped me. I was the only American on the team for 2 and 3 years. So back then it wasn't nearly as popular for the U.S. kids to go over and play Major Junior. But really a great experience for me. Played with some great players and had a great billet family, the Byards. So nothing but good memories.
Yeah, that's cool. It's cool. I, you know, still remember all those things. And, you know, I did my research, and, you know, if it was... if you were just a year younger, or if he was a year older, you just would have played a season with Bob Probert. It would have been that Detroit-Windsor connection. That would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, and, you know, because of that, we sometimes run each other up there in the summers training and that stuff, or here even in Detroit or Windsor. Yep. Most of the stories I can't say on the on the radio, but, yeah, he played just after. And I stayed in touch with Dave Draper, and, you know, he even back then was expressing that this guy was pretty special as a player and a tough guy, but... that, you know, he was having some struggles with him and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's where all, like, negative or positive, that's where all the, a lot of those things begin, you know, is in junior, where you first start to see these players and these guys and the connections and stuff. And obviously for you, it goes all the way back to then as well. But I know it was a different time, but pretty quickly you went into your playing career. You you got called up to the Calgary Flames, where you were drafted after your first junior season. So kind of take me through that, you getting the call and getting to play. Had to have been pretty cool for you. You're like 18 years old.
Yeah, it was awesome. I still remember it, you know. I was supposed to get called up earlier, and I broke my wrist the day before I was supposed to go up. And it was, I don't know, navicular bone or something. It's a tough one to heal. So, you know, kind of put me back, and did get a chance later to go up for a few games, but... unfortunately, just a few games in the regular season and some exhibition games over the years, but I wouldn't change any of it for anything.
Of course, just to be able to get that call and be able to go up there. Do you remember how it all kind of went down for you? Because obviously, like, you play 1 year in the O, get drafted, and then during that next season is when they kind of needed you, obviously, for a short period of time.
Yeah, I played against Minnesota and against Pittsburgh. So yeah, I remember it pretty vividly, you know. I remember my first exhibition game ever when after I got drafted was against LA Kings, and I hate saying these stories because it makes you feel that old, but it was Marcel Dion, I think, his last year, you know. So young defenseman, you're all confident, you're like, I want to get out there and play against him and show people I can shut him down. And so I got my wish, that old saying, be careful what you wish for, you just might get it. I go out there, and this guy stops, starts, and turns like 20 times in one shot. I'm trying to chase him around. I just went back to the bench and thought, oh, my God, I'll never be able to play here. So he's a pretty amazing skater, pretty amazing player. That was my first exhibition game ever.
Yeah, well, that was probably just a Saturday skate for him, too. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing to see the difference in the levels, especially at a young age, coming from junior and being able to test yourself and see the differences there. And you know, as I mentioned, it was a different time. You went back to Brampton. You wrapped up your junior career, another season or two there, and then off to pro. You started in the CHL and then later the IHL. So how did that work out for you? Did nothing really pan out with Calgary, so you ended up signing with Oklahoma City? Or?
Well, St. Louis ended up bringing me to camp, and I ended up signing down there at Peoria for them. Oklahoma City was actually associated with Calgary back then, so they kept switching affiliates. But it didn't work out, but I ended up getting to play in the minors and some great places with great people also. You know, won a championship in Peoria down there and established a lot of friendships. Still get to Peoria and see people. Peoria Riverman have had like a 35-40 year here now. My son and daughter were born down there. My son still lives down there. So, you know, that's what I say. Some people say, oh, you wish you would have played more. You know, maybe, but I think all things happen for a reason. You made me a better person, struggling a little bit through all that kind of stuff. Certainly made me a better hockey coach. Mm-hmm. And had great life experiences that, you know, most people could only wish for, so I can't complain.
Absolutely. Every little aspect of life shapes who you are. So I'm sure that experience was very vital for you, and I'm sure it's what eventually led you into coaching, or at least helped you kind of transition. We'll get into that in just a sec, but before we do, you know, like I mentioned, it was a different time. We had, you know, the WHA, the NHL, we had the CHL, we had all these leagues, and stuff like that. So I'm sure you cross paths with a lot of great players and coaches there as well. You know, we kind of touched upon it in your OHL days, but one name I noticed was Mike Vernon. Spent some time with him, and probably many others as well. But were those pro leagues much more competitive back in the day? Did you feel like, you know, it's a little different looking back?
Well, I think, you know, having been in Kosha, it is different. You know, it certainly was much more rough and tough game back in the day, right? There wasn't much room for saying, hey, this isn't fair or this is too rough. Either you know, got through it or you didn't. So that was certainly different. And I just think a little more desperation. There wasn't many things in place for kids that needed help adjusting, which I'm glad there is now. But there just wasn't much of that back then. You know, it was kind of dog eat dog. And if you wanted to stay, this is what you had to do, you know. So definitely different. But, yeah, I got a chance to play with a lot of great players in juniors and in the minors and different places. And CHL and IHL were kind of both the AAA league back then and now Grand American League. And then now it's morphed into just the American League, of course. But yeah, the Western teams would have the CHL and Midwest teams would have the IHL and Eastern teams had the American League. So, yeah. A lot of good times.
Oh, I bet, man. Yeah, that's what I mean, though. Like, it seems like the pools were a little bit different, you know? Obviously, nowadays, the best of the best are in the NHL, but back then, there was opportunity to play elsewhere and be at that level, too.
Yeah, I tell people stories sometimes at games or brawls. You know, way back then, yeah, they were changing the warm-ups in Major Junior because there were so many fighting going on. They were making teams warm up at different times. And I tell people some of their stories, and they think you're, you know, making them up. Or
yeah,
they think I saw a slap shot, and I'm thinking it's real. But a lot of it was at times.
Yeah.
Not as bad as people think. It was just much tougher, that's all.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, on paper, it's like, yeah, this is slap shot. But let's not get too carried away. We're not all playing with cars and eating tinfoil and shit like that, you know?
Exactly.
So, you know, now, like you mentioned, everything happens for a reason, and compared to your coaching career, it looks like you had a short playing career. Just looking at the resumes, like the list is a lot longer of all the teams you've been able to coach and things you've been able to do. So it looks like your last year you were a player coach and then eventually got into your first GM and head coaching gig, which I mentioned earlier. That's just probably what helped kind of transition you. So how did you make that decision to kind of step off the ice and onto the bench?
Well, you know, it's a good question. Basically, I was, you know, scared to death. I kind of, in my life, because of going through the Canadian route back in the day when not many Americans did, and not going through the college route, but I wasn't really Canadian and didn't go through the college route, so I've always kind of been in the middle there and don't have a group of people sometimes that you need as you're moving up in the ranks and as coaching and all that stuff. But, you know, I got into it. I got a great mentor, I think, with Dave Draper. You know, he was really, really good. Way back then in juniors, Jeff Jackson, even, the head coach at Notre Dame, his first head coaching job was my midget team in St. Clair Shores, you know. And he was a young guy then, really, you know, put a lot of work in it. And then Dave Draper was fantastic. So those two guys kind of influenced me as far as actually putting in the work and having a plan for practice in your team, each player. And then in the IHL, you know, I became our team player rep, and we just needed help, you know. We had an old school coach and all that stuff, so I became player, assistant coach, and captain, and player rep that year. So it kind of at least showed me how the business end of it worked.
Yeah.
Got to help Pat Kelly with some of that business stuff. And I guess you said how I got into coaching. So being in the middle of that thing, I didn't have a college degree, and, you know, didn't look like I was going to make the NHL then. Maybe if I'd have waited a few more years, things started to change for the better. But, you know, there was a lot of players being signed. It just, you know, the WHA was gone, all that stuff. So a lot of competition. And I was worried about what I was going to do. So when I was playing in Colorado for Calgary's Farm Team, I met a great guy, Johnny Andrianakos. And he used to come to games and stuff. And I lived in his neighborhood, stopped at his restaurant. He said, "What are you going to do after hockey?" She said, "I have no idea. Because I want to get in the restaurant business." So he was good enough to teach me everything from the ground up and even give me some seed money to get my own restaurant. So that's really just worrying about what I was going to do. That's how I got out of hockey. Then from there, I moved back to Peoria and opened up my own place. And Peoria didn't have a midget or a high school program. And people kept bugging me. You know, I opened up a big sports bar. It was called Tony C's, and it was doing well. And people said, "Geez, you got to help us start a program. You know, people, please help us." And I was like, man, I'm busy. You know, I don't know if I can do this, but we did. We had a lot of success. Some kids that nobody gave a chance end up winning a state championship, high school state championship in their third year. And, you know, it was just kind of a special experience. I really, really got hooked on it. So the only high school state championship ever won outside the Chicago area to this day, I believe. And right after that, the owner of a new team in the North American League, the Springfield Junior Blues, he lived in Peoria. And he'd been hearing about, you know, me building the midget program and all that stuff. And he knew I played the rhythm. So he offered me a job in Springfield. And, you know, we had pretty immediate success, and I was hooked.
That's cool, man. That's interesting, because there was that gap in between the first year and going over to Springfield. So sometimes, you know, these internet databases, they miss some stuff, or they're just not right. So it kind of clears that up. At least that's, you know, you're actually kind of finding the passion for coaching at the high school level. I figured that, you know, there was just a point where you're like, you know, I want to keep this in my life. I like doing it, the coaching aspect of it. And I love hockey, obviously, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Most of us, I guess, that play hockey at a high level are super competitive. I'm ultra competitive, maybe to a fault sometimes. So I was really missing the play, and I was getting all the calls from Rick Dudley to go back and play in the eye. Flint had good teams back then. I got calls for a couple of years, and they're kind of come on back. Because when I quit, I, you know, I've been an all-star in the IHL and a captain of my team and all that stuff, so it's kind of unexpected. But I hung in with the other thing, but I really missed the competition. So the coaches helped, the coaching helped fill that void a little bit. And, you know, I love teaching. Like, I, to this day, don't get tired of going to practice. Like, a lot of people say, oh, we got another practice, so we got four practices this week. I love those chances to get better. That stuff just doesn't bother me. People just stay forever. Mm-hmm. Could you go on all those bus trips and everything? You know what? Somehow I like them. Just all the boys getting together and going somewhere else and challenging themselves. I love that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I was hooked on it after that.
Oh, absolutely. That's what they say. You know, you got to love going to the rink every day and all that stuff. And every little aspect of a team is a team, like you mentioned, just the road trips, every little thing like that makes a huge difference, and it makes teams successful, really. And you guys had some really early success early on in Springfield, which is good for you. It seems like when you jump on, you get on the winning track at least. And then a little bit into that stint with Springfield is when you came over to Windsor, took over the head coaching role midway through the 97-98 season. So how did that come to be for you? I'm sure you were presented it somehow, and did you want to kind of try and make the jump and challenge yourself in the OHL? Or?
Yeah, I think the OHL is the best junior league in the world. You know, it's a fantastic league. Everybody knows that. So, and I obviously had played there, so couldn't wait to get the chance. You know, I think just people started seeing the success we're having in Windsor, and we were having it, you know, against CompuWare, and, you know, they had been in the league, and they were in the league, and so there's some people there that talk to the owner of Windsor, and so I ended up getting a call, and went down there and looked around and wanted the challenge. You know, back then, Windsor didn't have the new rink. They had the old barn, which was, I think, pretty cool place, yeah. And, you know, they had struggled. I think they had 8 coaches in 12 years and 4 or 5 GMs, and they hadn't made the playoffs when I got there in about 10 years, so I knew it would be a challenge, but I relished that. You know, but I soon found it was quite an uphill struggle for different reasons that aren't even worth getting into. But quick story, as I'm coming in that day, I'm listening to CKLW, and callers are calling in on this show, and first 3 callers, so the one guy especially, goes, well, that's great. Spitfire's got another new coach. That's all they need. And the next guy, he said, yeah, that goes, great. You know, and all the hockey people in Canada, we have to hire an American. So I said to my buddy that was driving with me, I said, boy, this is going to be fun.
Yeah. Cutthroat Windsor, man. Yeah. If only they would have known that you were actually Canadian, technically, in a sense, and just from Detroit, too. So, you know, really close to here, yeah, really.
You know, people say, hey, how could you win at all these different levels and this and that? I think it's really about kind of that, well, putting in the work, of course, and all that kind of stuff, but about creating the culture, you know. And when I got there, you know, they didn't have anything about their past there, and they had many of ex-great players, junior player, Ernie Godden, a bunch of guys. Yeah. So one of the locker rooms redone and plaques put up and awards people had won. Just really changing the culture that had been, I think, pretty stale there for a long time. And that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and, you know, didn't work out. But, again, wouldn't change that either. That's fantastic people down there. So
Yeah, well, hey, it worked out for them 10 years later when they did the exact same thing, made a new arena, and you've revamped it, put up the pictures, you know. That's what a lot of kids say nowadays that come in here, too. And they say, you know, I look around and I see the OHL championships from Taylor Hall and whatever. It's like we were kind of talking about before. It's those little things that make a big difference. And, you know, it's that's what makes a winning championship coach as well.
Yeah, so, you know, they were talking about, that's one of the reasons I went, getting the new rink built with the current owner that was there, but it just didn't pan out, so.
Oh, yeah.
But again, it was a good learning experience, and there's some great people there, and, you know, obviously, again, just being in a Canadian town, being able to coach hockey is quite an honor, so.
Mm-hmm. And you coached a lot of great players, like, in your whole career, and even during your time here, at least players that would make lasting impressions, you know, one way or another, so. I'm sure that there's good memories on and off the ice, especially in the barn, as you mentioned too, right?
Absolutely, that's what I say. I wouldn't change it at all. There's a lot of good stuff there. You know, some of it teaches you lessons, some of it makes you a better person, some of it's just part of life. So
yeah,
it was good stuff. And from there, I got offered. Well, I went to Erie for the second half of that second year there, and helped them through their playoff deal, and then got the job in Texas and started another expansion team in North American League.
Yeah, and you ran off from there. I mean, kind of talked about that as well, and, you know, we could talk about all these different players, like nitpick all these guys and stuff, but and you mentioned challenges here in Windsor as well, and it leads me to one question that I gotta ask about one particular person. I'm pretty sure you were the coach on the bench, at least, for the whole Jeff Kugel incident, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, I was.
So, I mean, that was probably something to be sitting there watching. And, again, kind of alludes to just the culture of the team at the time.
Yeah, you know, the problem is everyone's got their memories, right? It's like politics now. But if people look at an actual video where you could see everything, you know, it was never portrayed accurately. You know, Mark Rideout, Windsor kid.
Yep.
Real good kid, tough kid. Puts an open ice body check on Avery, Sean Avery, and no penalty. He starts skating away, and Sean Avery baseball swings a stick at him. So Mark stops, and he goes over there, and, you know, he's a lot tougher than Avery. And next thing, one of their guys jumped off the bench immediately, which, you know, back then especially, that's what you do. Avery's one of the better players, so a guy jumps off the bench. Can't remember his name, but he played in the NHL. So then when he did that, I think it was, again, not trying to say any negative about it, but it was kind of how you just did it. I think it was Blair Stazer played for us. He's a third-round pick in the NHL. And he jumped off the bench, because that guy jumped off the bench. And they jumped another guy, and I was holding guys back. I literally lost a nail. Got ripped off my back holding guy. And Kugel's in both on the ice till just about everybody was on the ice.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he chased that guy around, you know, which none of us want in hockey, but, you know, wasn't like we sent Jeff Kugel out there, which is how the story gets or something.
Oh, no, no, you could tell. You could tell by watching that. He was just on the loose at that point.
Yeah. I mean, we were holding guys. They were trying to keep control and everything, but, you know, just...
Well, yeah.
You know, but,
yeah.
I guess it's good for people to talk about once in a while. It's entertaining. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things, right? It's one of those things, like, you know, maybe I beat a dead horse with the whole hazing thing here in Windsor, but it's something that changed the culture, you know, and this is, you know, this alludes to it too. It's part of our history, and it's not something, at least in Windsor, that I think, you know, we have to ignore. It's just something that happened, right? And you happen to be there. It's part of our Windsor history, Windsor Spitfires history, which is what we do here on the show, right? So
I'm glad you do. You know, people, I think, in general need to learn that, you know, history's not perfect, people aren't perfect, but, you know, doesn't mean anybody's bad or whatever.
No, of course. Jeff was
trying to do the best he could do. You know, I mean, he didn't play very much at all. Crowd chanted for him all the time, and I know it's frustrating for him, everything not playing, but, you know, obviously OHL's a pretty darn good league, and they used to boo me because I didn't put him on the ice enough, so... Then when he got out there, you know, something happened. But
yeah, and of all places, for it to happen is at the barn where everyone's right on top of you. You can hear everything they're saying and stuff like that. So to, you know, wrap up that Windsor part of it, again, just coaching at the barn and just craziness back in the day, man. It's something that that I'm proud to say happened here, at least.
Yeah, and those kind of rinks, man, I'm sure any hockey guy, you hear it all the time, but just those old rinks that we all grew up playing in and the atmosphere you had in them, you know, it's just, you miss that stuff. It's awesome stuff. New rinks are great, too, but nothing like going to a small Canadian town or Michigan or wherever, and you go to one of those old rinks, it's just got a great feel to it. I don't know what the bar did, for sure. I know they got a great rink there now.
Yeah.
I'm glad they do, but there's a lot to be said about those old rinks and that type of feel.
Oh, yeah, man, that's our pride and joy, you know, so that's one of those Windsor things. But, you know, aside from Windsor Spitfire players that you coach, and it's funny that you mentioned Mark Rideout, actually. I had him on the show, and you coached them both in Windsor and in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. But, again, sorry, go ahead.
No, I said, yeah, I tried to take him to Texas because at the time he was, you know, struggling with a few things, I think. He's a great kid and just was trying to help whoever I could, even after I left. I've always had that philosophy. You know, any way you can help your players, you try to help them, you know, on and off the ice. So,
yeah. Well,
he's been down there for a while. I think it was a decent life experience for him. I hear he's doing well, which is great, and the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, he's coaching with Eric Wellwood and the Flint Firebirds. So, that's definitely something to be proud of, for sure, in the OHL. So,
I didn't even know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, he was with the Lancers for a little bit and then quickly bounced over there.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
But, you know, like you mentioned, like, networking is everything, and being able to shape these players is really the business that you're in. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on, but I'm sure you don't want to exclude anybody, but who are some of your, you know, players that you're proud to say you've been, had a part in shaping their careers?
You know, honestly, I don't want to be avoiding any of you, but there are so many kids, and a lot of them didn't even end up being great players, but you know, there's been experiences we've shared where they've said, you know, it's helped a couple of them become doctors, you know, and they said, it wasn't for this particular thing or my junior career, I don't think I could have made it through this. Or it's because of, you know, my time in juniors that, you know, made me want to do this or gave me the perseverance to be able to do this. So I think that's the lesson for young kids, that there's a lot to learn out of a good, disciplined, tough sport like hockey that you need in life, you know, and I've seen it. So I really would. There's been so many great kids I've been fortunate enough to coach in so many places, even in Peoria High School, where they weren't, you know, high-level hockey players, but they were great kids that achieved something that people say could never be done. And then there were some NHL guys in the OHL and the North American League and East Coast League. So I don't want to name them in particular, but I do feel very fortunate that I've run across a lot of good kids and good players over the years.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of people don't realize it's not all on the ice too, right? Like you mentioned, some of them might not even end up being players, but if they didn't meet you in hockey, you wouldn't be able to help them off the ice. You know, that's part of being a coach. It's almost like being a teacher, as you mentioned earlier too.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Man. So, you know, after a long and successful coaching career, looks like you've kind of taken your expertise off the bench in a way. Not sitting behind the 18-player squad, you know, but offering training to everyone. I'm assuming this is a bit of you looking to take on something new, and with the current climate of the world and hockey and all, looks like you've kind of opened up your services as a personal coach and, you know, hockey-specific trainer.
Yeah, just, again, trying to pass on what I can. I think that's important, you know. Back in the day, that's what I was always taught. There's ton of guys when I was a young kid that did it for me. So I want to stay in the game. I love to teach, as I mentioned, and I think this is the way you can still make a difference. You know, family advising has become a big thing in the States now. It's like, you know, you can't have an agent because you lose your eligibility, but you're allowed to have a family advisor. You know, it's a very convoluted path to make it in the United States versus Canada, where you live here, you kind of have one or two paths to go, you know, and everyone knows that. That's what they do. You live in this area, you play in this area, you can play tier two, you can play major junior. In the U.S., there's dozens of different paths you can take and still be successful in hockey, and it's quite confusing, and a lot of times the hockey families, the parents, aren't that well-versed in hockey, so the laser that came about. And for me, I was doing it for free for guys forever, but guys were, I'm getting spots in juniors in college, and yet they still had paid a family advisor. So a lot of people say, hey, you need to just do this and do it the right way. There are certainly some good family advisors out there, but want them. You know, you sign somebody and you give them the odd email or whatever, but you're not doing a lot of service for them. So we wanted to upgrade that whole process since parents were paying for it. So I've done that, and it's combined with the guy I play, Lou Jaros, who I played peewee hockey with way back in the day, who has a website, Stream Cortex, that we're going to combine with my family advising. So we can watch players' games during the year, we can cut some of their film during the year, and we can get that film out to junior, college, prep school, whatever major, or OHL, whatever coaches we need to send that to, we can send them to. So that's kind of it. Along, and then during the season, but especially in the summer, we do a lot of association work, skill work with the, you know, the AAA 14s, 15s, 16s, and 18s. I did that with Indianapolis. Did it with some of the Chicago teams. We do a lot of group training, like defenseman stuff in the summer. We'll have, you know, six top AAA kids or six top junior kids. We'll be out there 3-4 days a week working on the finer points of the game. That's all that, you know, so competitive nowadays, man. You've got to...
Yeah.
You've got to keep working. And I find what I see a lot in coaching is people are teaching skills, but they don't ever teach how those skills fit into the game. I used to say in practice all the time when I coached, still do, whenever I got guys, there are no drills. We're practicing game situations. And here's where this situation would work into a game for you. And I think if you approach it that way, you can help guys gain hockey sense and hockey insight, you know? I'm sure a lot of other coaches out there listen to maybe that same thing. I go watch a guy in practice. I feel like, you got to see this kid play. So you go watch little Bobby play, and he's flying around pylons and tight turning, and, you know, heads up and shoulders are switching. And then you go watch him in a game, and you're like, what the heck is he doing out there? He's flying around all over, but not the places he needs to go. So try to be a little more specialized. Guys going to high levels that need to make the decisions and figure out how the game works.
That's really cool, man. Different little flair to you know, the aspect of I'm going to do some hockey training, you know. It's a little more specific, and it's what people need nowadays. And obviously, I know how to find you, but if someone's listening to this and would be interested in your services, how could they contact you or find any information on what you're offering?
Well, TonyCurtelliHockey.com would be one way. And then soon our whole thing will be finished with our hockey stream team, which is going to combine that Stream Cortex company I mentioned with my family advising. So it'll be the hockey stream team here soon. And they'll have everything on there. You know, training, family advising.
It's easy enough nowadays to just do a quick little Google search or TonyCurtelliHockey.com. Easy enough. So that's it. That's a wrap. Thanks a lot, Tony, for taking the time to do this. I appreciate it.
Well, I really appreciate you reaching out, Drake, and it was great talking to you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there we have it. Tony Curtelli on the Wind City Sports Radio Show, another Italian here in the hockey world. Thank you again to Tony for taking the time to do that interview over the phone. Turned out to be a great interview. You know, sometimes reaching out to people, you never know what you're going to get. And, you know, like I said, Tony had only been in Windsor for like basically a season and a half. But... whatever. It's a great way to tie it into Wind City. He got to coach in the barn. He coached a lot of good players in Windsor, and, you know, obviously was present for that Jeff Kugel incident that, again, if you're not familiar with that, go watch the YouTube video. We are going to post something online. Check out our Instagram. Who knows, at the time you're listening to this, if we've done the Wind City Sports visualized yet. I'm going to sync up Tony's commentary to that video, but figured it was a good way to reach out to him, especially when I seen the Brantford Alexanders. I thought, oh, what if he played with Bob? What if he coached the Spitfires? He's from Detroit. It's a perfect tie-in. And aside from that, it was just super cool to talk to a longtime hockey coach and hear you know, his perspective of things, how he got into it, starting at the high school level, getting, you know, that vital experience and winning championships from an early on, you know. So it's a cool conversation. Again, thank you to Tony for taking the time to do that. It's always good to talk to coaches. I mean, especially like if you coached the Windsor Spitfires for a year or two, definitely crossed paths with a lot of Windsor legends. And it was a tough time for the team, as we mentioned. We always kind of, you know, beat the dead horse when it comes to the Akeem Alou, Steve Downey incident. We talked about that at the beginning of the show. And I say it changed the culture of the Windsor Spitfires hockey. And I've talked about this with many people, including people who were there, like Jonathan Shaka and Brad Stetsinger and Bob Belichico, actually, who recorded that. And, you know, that the reason that I talk about it is to talk about the transition and how, you know, that sparked a complete management change. That's what, or when, Warren Reichel and Bob Bergner were able to come in and buy the team, and they completely shifted everything. But it was all stemming from that incident. And something fairly similar happened with Jeff, and as Tony had talked about, and I kind of alluded to it as well, like it kind of speaks to the culture that he was talking about with the team. You know, he said things were not positive when he went into that dressing room, flat out. I mean, it happens in hockey, even in our Windsor, in our barn. Doesn't matter how great we think they are, this is a team, you know. And, you know, when we watch this video for over 20 years, I think almost 20 years it's been out there now, we never knew the backstory, and we still don't, really. Maybe some people, maybe he doesn't know, you know, what happened, but it's cool to talk about history, rather if it to some people might be negative. I know, like, when the intention wasn't to get him on to ask him that, but when I did, I thought he was kind of like, oh boy, here we go. Shit, we got to talk about this again. But like he said, it's something that people get interested in, and I know people today that still are like, put that on, watch that. So it's cool to hear his perspective. And little did I know that Sean Avery was involved in that play. Of course, it all started with him, but at least he's doing better things now, patrolling the streets of New York bike lanes. But anyway, we do not have a lot of local sports news to let you guys know about, which is why I've been ranting for as long as I already have. But we're going to try. We did miss a few things. We had two Windsor Spitfires be drafted to the NHL last week. Not a big deal. So obviously we missed that last week. But just going through the Twitter and stuff like that, just stuff that you normally share in regards to news, local sports news, there's not a lot. So let's kick things off with our Windsor Spitfires. I believe 2 weeks ago, after recording the podcast, we weren't able to drop this news, but the OHL had announced all their key dates. Maybe that was freaking 4 weeks ago. They're back on track and looking to get things started at the end of this year. Similar, and then the NHL on January 1st, fairly similar. So once the Stanley Cup was finalized, you know, they started to, or at least getting close to it, they started looking at the future, and they had decided on October, I believe, 5th and 6th was the draft. And in the second round, we had two Windsor Spitfires, two of our best, get drafted. First was Will Cooley. He was off to New York, Broadway. And then from there, Jean-Luc Foudy. Yeah, Jean-Luc. I always get him confused with his brother, Liam. Jean-Luc Foudy was selected by the Colorado Avalanche. So both of them being picked up by wagons of teams, and in that sense, Cooley being picked up by the Rangers, who are in a rebuild, really, not like a whole rebuild, but they still got some work to do, management wise, you know, building that team, and they get a godsend with Alexis Lafreniere being their first overall pick. They won that lottery. They had the second round pick, was it last year, the year before that, for Kapo Kako. So they definitely have a lot of stud. Elite prospects, as some would say, in the making, as well as guys like Panarin on the team. I know they just got rid of Hank, but Will Cooley, a kid who played here in Windsor for the last few years, could be playing with them on Broadway at MSG very soon. And then you got Foudy, who was drafted to the Avalanche. Again, another stacked team. Right now, the Stanley Cup favorites for 2021. Betting odds were released, and it looks like they are the favorite at this point. And they still have some sick rookies on their team like Cole Makar. So he could fit in there fairly well in the next few years. So yeah, this is going to be a tough Wind City Sports radio show later on today, guys. If you're listening first thing in the morning, there's not a lot of sports news. Not much more on our Windsor Spitfires aside from the draft that took place last week. And I think that's pretty much it for hockey. We did have the Windsor Lancers Sports Alumni Hall of Fame. I think that was last week as well. They did a virtual ceremony due to COVID-19. Noelle Montcalm was the headline athlete entering the hall. She was on the show oh man, I think back episode 57. She's way back there as well. Lasina Ragu was entered into the Hall of Fame, as well as Scott Hillman from the hockey team and Matt Butler, swimmer. So congratulations to all of them. Maybe some future guests in the future. Who knows? We'll see. But you know what? Aside from that, there's not much. Keep an eye out on the Wind City Sports social media feeds, as well on the radio show later on today, in case any breaking news is able to be landed on there before it's too late. But that is all this week on the Wind City Sports Podcast. My name is Drake DeMore, and I am your host for every episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast. This is actually our 210th episode. I did a bonus episode, 166.5, last year. I don't know why I should have just included it in the sequence, but 210 episodes with, you know, 200 different interviewees. We have had people double up, of course, so I think, if not 200, close to it, different interviews, all available on WindCitySports.com or anywhere podcasts are found. Of course, wherever you're listening to it right now, just listen to the next one. Listen to last week's with Glenn Mills, or the week before that with Megan Augusta. I used to do it weekly for many years, but now just getting busy in this adult life. Every other week, the Wind City Sports Podcast is released on WindCitySports.com, anywhere podcasts are found, first thing in the morning. But every single week, we are on CJAM 99.1 FM in Windsor and Detroit on your radio for the Wind City Sports Radio Show, just a 30-minute time slot, fitting in some highlights from our podcast interviews, as much local sports news as we can gather and read off within that time, as well as some music to fill the void and keep you entertained, because that is certainly what CJAM does best. And keep your eye out for the fall fundraiser coming up as well soon for all you CJAM supporters. But here on the podcast, we'll have the full uncut and unedited versions of interviews. Wow, the radio show just plays highlights and clips to fill in that 30-minute slot. Check us out on social media at WinCity_sports, anywhere it can be found, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or just simply go to WinCitySports.com. WINCITY. Wind City is all one word if you're ever trying to find us. Been around for almost 5 years now, so it should be easy. Wind City Sports or the Wind City Sports Podcast. Even just Google us, see all the things that pop up, as well as a YouTube channel. Forgot about the YouTube channel. We gotta release some more videos soon. Maybe we'll drop that one with Tony. But anyway, you can also follow me, Drake DeMore, on Twitter and Instagram, @DrakeDeMore. But until next week, smell you later.